posted her cats today. Did you see her cats?
I didn't
check. Oh my gosh. Book. I'm sorry. You have to look. There's one of the cats.
Sweetie, Mimi, right,
what's that kind of cat? The one on the right side, the one with that face that looks like a grumpy cat. What kind of cat is that?
I got to unmute her.
Unmute her.
Okay, Mimi, you're unmuted.
Cat. Both my cat's on with the Chihuahua.
And the Chihuahua.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
Yes. Let me see your, where is it?
While you look, I'm going to jump
oh,
in.
Oh, here it is. Look at that cat.
Is that her cat?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It's cat nerd, but he's got a hat on.
Yes.
Cat with a hat.
Okay.
You didn't say cat in a big top
no,
hat.
No, sweetie. You don't know what I'm going to say. No. So Millie loves Kimmy's slogan for Team Zen. Hope
me too.
She gets a commission for it. Yeah, she gets gratitude. That's what she gets. okay, so we have a lot of questions, which is awesome. I know Helen. Look at it, we're going to start out with Helen. Helen, are you there?
Hi there.
Hi, Helen.
Go ahead.
I was just thinking I should write it down because I rambled so badly last time. It was embarrassing.
just you do your best to keep it short okay. without losing any important stuff.
Yeah, I'll try. Okay, my question is about sort of trying to teach sort of self-respect and listen to your feelings to your kids, and so that they have a lot of self-love, and then that sort of translates into, you know, care for other people. But there's a couple of times, like, there's two different examples. One was sort of like, I asked my daughter, like, who do you love best in the world? And she said, me, I love me best in the world. So I thought, well, that's good because that's, you know, very healthy. But then, of course, I immediately sort of worried that, oh, maybe that means, that, like, because she's an only child as well. I was like, oh, I don't want to go to, like, selfish. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that would be, like, going too far that way. And then, when we have disagreements and we have sort of, like, this been some fighting about school, getting ready for school and things like that. You know, like quite often I own it and I say, oh, you know, mommy wasn't in a good place because she, you know, she was stressed and she was worried and she, like all this stuff. And I try to explain why I acted that way and, you know, that I shouted and it wasn't the best way to deal with it, etc. And I sort of own that. And then she goes, yeah. I noticed that I was disappointed. Like, you know, she didn't say that, but you know, paraphrasing. I was disappointed in your behavior, mommy. And then it's sort of like, there's not the, cause she's eight, you know, like I would like her to say yes, but I wasn't the best person either at that moment, etc.
Yeah.
And like, of course, being eight, you don't necessarily see that one person apologizing, then you have to do that like reciprocal thing. So she just kind of like nods. Yeah, that wasn't great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, how do you kind of like then say, and your behavior as well, maybe there was something that you could have changed that would have helped the situation too. So anyway, so I'd like your advice on that one.
Wow. Right. That's
good question,
a great
Helen.
Question. I'm going to start and then Sweetie's going to finish. So if I can sum up your question, the difference between self-love and being selfish, actually that's what you wrote in your email to me. I think that if you're, you know, Helen, I already know you're a good mom, even though I don't know you that well. So I would say that when you do kind of own your own piece, if you're doing it with the anticipation of getting something back, I still think that there's a little bit of work in there. And believe me, I'm raising my hand because I have the same work. But if you can find the place in yourself to apologize without having any expectation whatsoever of getting any reciprocating apology, then I, you know, it's what Kathy and I was talking about, role modeling, it will work out itself in the end. Now your 8-year-old may figure this out tomorrow or when she's 9 or when she's 13. So that's my 2 cents.
Yeah, I have two things to say. The first one is about her saying that she loves herself. I think, obviously, I think that's a wonderful thing. And I think that you could, even when she says that, I love myself best, you could say, and you know what's so great about loving ourselves best is then we have so much love to give away. You know, it's like you can acknowledge the fact that we need to love ourselves best. That is the goal and the key, and that is a self-worth. I don't think at 8 years old that's selfish at all. I think it's definitely child developmentally appropriate. She's just getting into abstract thinking. So right now she is her own world. So it's a very good thing that she says, and it's nothing that you need to worry about. But if there is a value system you're trying to teach around compassion, you can say, you know, I'm so glad you love yourself the most. Now you're like a cup full of love that you can share with others, you know, that kind of thing. And then in answer to Todd's question, or in what Todd just said, I agree with him. I don't think our 14-year-old sometimes has a hard time, like when we take ownership of something, she'll be like, yeah, you know, you did do that, you know? And I think in that moment, they are learning how to take ownership of something, because we're role-playing it for, it's not even role-playing, we're authentically doing it, but they're watching us do it. So I think that, and they're hearing it and they're feeling it, so they are learning it. There have been a few times, like at dinner the other night, this came up with my daughter, and I looked at her, and again, she's older than your daughter, but I said something to the effect of, now wait a second, you know, I'm taking ownership for mine. Is there anything in the situation that you could have done differently or that you recognized? Now, if your daughter's answer is no, say, okay, mm-hmm. you know, just, but what you're doing is you're taking it a step further and saying, I'm going to demonstrate something, and then I'm going to ask you if you notice anything. And if you do that without, like Todd said, without needing a certain response, like don't, you know, you're not doing it so she says this perfect, beautiful thing that we read in books. Then you're still teaching her. Now, my 14-year-old owned it really quick when I said that, you know, and I said, do you know what I'm talking about when we were at dinner?
Which time, sweetie?
When I said, it was actually about something different. It was about, she was mad.
She was right there, yeah, and you were right mad. There.
She was angry about something, and she said, I was really angry, and I took a lot of things out on people that night. And I was about to give her this huge compliment, and she goes, yeah, but I had every right to.
Yeah, she was so close.
She was so close. And I said, now, wait a second. I said, I was about to give you a huge compliment for owning everything, and I still will give you that compliment, but can you recognize the difference between how you felt and how you behaved? Is that you had every right to feel that way, and you can feel that, you know, I would have felt similarly, but that didn't then give you permission to be you know, to not be kind. And she's like, she totally owned it. She was like, you're right, you're right.
Well, and we introduced some humor into the conversation.
Yeah, we always make it
fun. But they were going nuts. They were driving me crazy, and I ended up turning down the lights because the energy in the room, our middle and our youngest were going at it. And then I think JC was talking to me. It was just like
loud.
Really loud.
Lots of energy in the room.
So we lucky enough, we have dimmer switches on our lights. And not that solved it, but it was just a reminder, like, let's chill the F out. Yeah. Not that it worked, but it was a good idea.
No, I went upstairs. I thought they chilled out.
Do you?
On their own, yeah. We don't always have to make them chill out. Sometimes we can just let them cool down.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a bunch of written questions, but I do want to open it up to the people that are on too. And Kimmy's right there to help us out. So, and we might be a little bit more compact with our answers today because I have like four questions. And I also want to allow the opportunity for anybody on the call to ask questions. So let me see if I can find Kimmy. There she is. Hi, Kimmy.
Hi.
What do you got?
I won't give a lot of the backstory because I'll try to make it quick because it's sort of a lingering question that I've had with my son for a long time. He's very uncoachable. Mm-hmm. And it's just a trait of his. It's who he is. And we've worked through it and things like that. He's gotten better in some aspects and in certain things and with certain people and all that stuff. But this year in particular at school, he's having a very, very difficult time. And part of that is the way that our county does this, and I absolutely hate it, but it is what it is. They have something called Futura, which is like a gifted program. And you can test into the program or you can be recommended or whatever. And one day a week, those kids get pulled and they go to another school for like their gifted education. Mm-hmm. So Channing tested into that. It wasn't anything I was ever gonna ask for him to be in, but he tested in for it, and like the county sent me a letter saying like that he's in, and we had to approve it. And I didn't want it to be like an opportunity I took from him, so we asked him about it, and he said he wanted to go, and I knew he wasn't getting the greatest education anyway. Mm-hmm. Like the school he's at, I work for the school district and I coach teachers and things. So it's not the school I wanted him to go to, but it is where he went, and I wasn't really worried about him academically. So I kind of viewed elementary as his emotional growth kind of time. And so anyway, so he goes to Future. So it's literally like this year he found out he's smart. Like he's always been smart, but
what grade is he in?
He's in fourth.
Okay.
And he's always worked really hard at school. He's always tried. It just, he didn't really have to, but he didn't know that. And this year, his teacher, it's her first year, but she's really like, sometimes she'll come in and tell the kids that, you know what, I didn't do anything all weekend, and so we're just going to wing it. And sometimes they'll just watch movies literally all day. And
wow,
there's like no homework. And, you know, sometimes she forgets to tell them they're going to have a test, and he'll take the test and he'll get 100, but he didn't have to study or anything. Like, so he's starting to learn these things about himself. And so he goes to Futura once a week, and he though feels that he's the stupidest kid there and that he got in on accident. So now he's sort of like in this little bit of like a self-loathing thing. So his uncoachableness is starting to become defensive. Like he feels like he needs to appear to be super smart. And if he's not, and someone has to help him, he gets really, really defensive. And so we wound up with a conference yesterday with the teacher. And one of the things that she told us was this huge emotional meltdown that he had. And I was a little concerned that she never told us. But he challenged her. He told her, you know, he was like, well, I think you're wrong. And so she literally got on his, like, she acted 9. And she was like, well, fine, watch. And she pulled up, like, YouTube and basically, like, humiliated him in front of the class and showed the class that Channing was, in fact, wrong. Mm. And he wound up having, like, he was really upset and was, like, rocking himself on the floor. Like, she never told us any of these things. And so my question is, like, we're doing our own version of what to do school-wise, but to help him and support him and to let him see, like, it's okay to be, I don't know what to do. Like, I feel like everything I know how to do from a teacher perspective, he can't hear, and he doesn't want to, it doesn't receive well. And I've never tried to be teacher at home, ever. Mm-hmm. He's been really, really hands-off with that. Like, he just, I really let him since kindergarten, like, homework was his responsibility, and he's always, it's just who he is. It's always been fine. But sometimes when stuff comes up, even in sports, anything, I think he thinks he's supposed to be perfect. And we've had a conversation with him about his biggest fears being in trouble, like in life. And so, but he has these little moments and they wind up turning into shame. And I can't stand it. Like he had this guilt moment one night and he woke me up in the middle of the night because he was so guilty. And he just sat in shame. Like, why am I so horrible? And I was like, oh my, like the thing you did wasn't okay, but it was just a thing. You're fine. And so I'm getting nervous that he's going in this like shamey kind of place and his school zone's not helping. So I need to know what to do the best from our end.
Got it. Okay.
Sorry, I tried to be quick.
No, I got it. No, I got it.
Go ahead.
Okay. So a few things. Number one, as far as the Future program, one thing I was kind of listening and thinking, if this was going on with my daughter, what would I say? The first thing I would say, and again, I'm not saying this is the answer, but to loosen the grip on this a little bit, I would say to your son, you know, it's your choice whether or not you're in this, and you don't have to do this. You don't, you tested into it, you're in it. It's not about quitting. It's about your level of comfort. If this is not, you know, if this is not where you feel like you want to be, you don't have to be there. Now, from what you're telling me, he'll probably push back on that and say, you don't think I'm supposed to be there, or I, you know, I'll feel dumb if I go down. And it's like, okay, so let's work with all of that information and figure out. But he needs to feel that there's light at the end of both tunnels. I think what we're trying to do for our kids is, it, you know, you're, the situation you're in really now is a difference between a growth and a fixed mindset. So if you know Carol Dweck's book about this, it's called Mindset, right?
I get that.
I think Mindset is Daniel Siegel's book. But regardless, there is a difference between growth mindset, which is we learn things, we fail, we learn things, we fail, we learn things, we fail. And over the failures, we learn. Fixed mindset is this belief system that we just are who we are. We're either smart or dumb. and we have to maintain and hold on to whatever that identity is for dear life. And that's why we never take risk. It's why we never go up or down. It's why we cheat on tests. It's why we hide our grades. Or it's why we're really self-promotional, because we're explaining, this is who I am. I'm my A's. So like and again, this doesn't mean he's going to be like this the rest of his life. He's just going through right now trying to figure out. And I know you said historically he has been somewhat uncoachable in this area, but how old is he, Kimmy?
He's 10.
He's 10. So, he's pretty young, meaning that, you know, literally his brain development is going to change in the next 2 years, where he's going to have more access to some rational thinking. So he's going to have some maturity, and some of that may break up. But really, even, have you heard of that book by Carol Dweck about growth and fixed mindset?
Yeah, I've done, through school and like with classrooms and stuff, we've done a lot of growth mindset and fixed mindset and things like that. Like I bought him the Big Life Journal.
Good.
But for him, like the Big Life Journal, like he just was like, I'm never going to use this.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. He's very, like, he doesn't like to talk about emotional things. Like everything just gets him. And we've talked about growth mindset versus, and she's like thousands of downloads that you can always get, and you get weekly email. And I just like that to him, I think feels schoolish. And so it doesn't fit at home. And so
right.
That's what I mean. It's like all the things that I know, like working with gifted kids and everything I know from the classroom doesn't work here. Like I have to figure out something very different that feels very homey. I can't quite figure out what that is yet with him.
And you know what I can maybe give you some like groundedness about this is everything that's home is home, meaning there's nothing you're going to do. And again, I'm not saying it forever, but right now there is nothing you're going to do at home that affects his education. Don't focus on his education at all at home. And you said you've already done that. You're not his teacher. Like you've already got a lot of this down. And so I'm probably just reiterating what you're doing. And maybe that's good enough right now, is that he needs complete separation between school and home, but he can still learn or experience, I'm using the word learn, but experience the difference between growth and set mindset, or set's the wrong word. What did I say? Growth and fixed in life situations at home. And he may always be like, I, when you're talking about him, I'm getting a picture in my head of him. He may always be a little more of a stiffer person. Doesn't mean he's unteachable or uncoachable for life, but his brain may zoom to a certain place first, and that's okay. Like that doesn't make him that's more of a personality type than it is like a literal problem. And so when you're talking to maybe a lot of the discussions, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but are around school or the way he feels about school. And if you can just be, and home can just be the soft place to land from school, where it's not about what are we going to do about school or how are we going to do this. If he brings it up, you can say, let's set a timer and talk about this for 10 minutes. And then let's just go back to home. Because he needs, if he's constantly spinning in, I'm failing here, or I'm, you know, they don't understand me, or I'm the worst kid there. You aren't going, you'll hear him, but you're not going to agree and you're not going to talk him out of it. You know, it's not a, he's got to, and the whole idea of what I said at the beginning about tell him he doesn't have to be in the future program is a visual I get, is he needs to know there's no closed doors. All doors are open. Learning, risking, not being in the program, excelling in the program, all the doors are open and he gets to choose. One of my daughter's friends really struggles because she's always been in a gifted program. And she has experienced a significant amount of anxiety in the last 2.5 years because she didn't think there was any way out of it. And she knew that she was struggling in it, and she didn't want to tell her parents that she was struggling in it. This is not your situation, but she saw closed doors everywhere. Like, I have to live in this discomfort. And what we want our children to know is there's a million doors.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of different options, and we can figure it out. We may not even know what that option is yet, but there are no closed doors. You are not stuck. And this feeling that you're having, it's telling you something. So let's look at all the options.
The only other thing I would add before we move on to Megan is, just when the time is right, you know. And Kim, I'm guessing that you're not into kind of preachy mode anyways, but just share with him your failures, your experiences. And, you know, what I've been saying to my kids lately is that if you're not failing, you're not taking enough risks. Like, just lighten up the stigma of what failing means. Because, and, you know, Millie's good at putting links on. Millie, if you can find a link to a book called The Gift of Failure by Jessica Leahy. It sounds like, and Melanie just said this in her text in the group chat, we have some of our kids want to be perfect. And if we can do our best without preaching to them, educating them how failure is actually a wonderful gift. Now, it doesn't sound like this teacher did a really good job of showing him that, but even that's a teachable lesson.
Experience.
That's an experience that he can build off of. So,
well, and you know, for anybody's child or for anybody listening to this, the whole perfectionist thing, and I think we know this because we've talked about this on the show a lot, it's just a form of, as Brené Brown would say, armor. It's just, perfectionism is not the desire to do well. Perfectionism is the fear of being found out. And what does found out mean? Whatever your fear is. Imposter syndrome, I'm not good enough. It's the way that we, and so our children need to understand the difference between I want to do well and I'm trying to be perfect. Perfection is insecurity. And it's not about saying you're insecure. It's about giving them some child appropriate language to say, actually, the desire to do everything right is not really a healthy desire. You know, that's actually the idea that we're going to pretend to be something we're not, because every human is challenged by a certain question or a certain problem. And, you know, sometimes they get B's and sometimes they get C's. And you can, and also one more thing, because this came up with my mom the other night. So last night I was talking to my mom, and my nephew he's going to be an engineer and he's at school at Iowa State. And I was talking on the phone with her and she was like, he's taking all these really heavy math classes and they're just so difficult. And he is so smart. And I have never been smart like that. I'm like, Mom, he is smart at math. You have been a literary genius. She's been a gifted English teacher her whole life. She used to write. She's much older now, but I'm like, don't say you're not smart. And this is the house things I had. No one told me I wasn't smart, but there was always this one path of smart. I'm really smart at a lot of things, but there are some things that I'm not. You know, math is not one of them. Cooking's not one of them. You know, there's many. And so our kids have to understand too, that smart means many different things. So when he's saying I'm not smart enough, it's also, there's actually charts. You can go onto Google and look at all the different kinds of genius and say, we all fall into either a bunch of these or one of these. So just giving him an expanded version of what smart means.
All right. Over to Megan. Megan, are you there?
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, Megan.
Hi there. Okay, gosh, which question to ask? I'm like triaging them in my mind. And I just switched to this one. It's about anxiety. Okay. I have a 10-year-old little boy, fourth grade, who he doesn't like it if we're out in public places and I were to go to the bathroom. Like, he has to come to the bathroom with me. And this has been going on for quite a while. I'm not even sure the origin of it. His thoughts about when it began might be different than mine. I think it was one soccer practice where I went to Target and I got back 2 minutes late.
Mm.
And it really scared him. That's where I think it may have began. And I lost trust. Like, and it's hard to gain it back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's continued. Like, that was maybe 9 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like my husband is traveling this week and our dog Lucy, like, he has to go outside in like 0-degree weather mm-hmm. with me to take her potty. And it feels kind of extreme. And I've just let him know, I think this is really natural. I said, do you feel, because I know there's a separation there at mm-hmm. 10. There's a separation from parents and wanting to be independent. And I said, do you kind of feel like you need me, but you really don't like that you need me?
Yeah.
And he says, yes. And it makes me angry. And I said, I want you to know that this is so normal. And That's just what kids go through. So I'm trying to normalize the behavior, but now I'm kind of wondering, and that was a month ago that we had that conversation, but now I'm wondering, is it more than developmentally, I hate to say normal, but typical? Mm-hmm. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Like, kind of extreme, like we're at the grocery store. I have to go to the bathroom. He comes into the women's bathroom, into the stall. Mm-hmm. with me. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're talking about here.
Does he show the same level of shyness, anxiety around his peers, or is it just when you're around?
Just when I'm around. If he had a friend with him at Whole Foods, he would stay out. Mm-hmm. He would come with me. So no, he is not a shy kid.
Okay. That helps. Thanks.
So I think it's absolutely normal. I don't think you need to worry about it at all. I think that I'm always sharing stories of our own experience. There was a time that, well, there was two times. There was one time that I forgot to pick Skylar up from kindergarten, which was a nightmare. And I had a good talk with her. I had a good cry about it. We tried to work through it. Instead of me pretending that I had any excuse, I said, I have no excuse, you know. But it came up a lot. And then there was a time when she was in first grade, year later, where I was late and I found her crying with a teacher, and the teacher's like, who's the mother of this child?
Who's the bad person?
I'm like running, you know, I'm like, I, you know, because she was crying. Like it was like I had left her, and again, it was like 5 minutes, but it was still, and those experiences, created a situation similar to what yours is, not necessarily about the bathroom. It's not exactly the same, but I know that she had to build up a sense of, I trust this person can show up for me. And here's why I think it's healthy, because he's willing to do it. Because the other option is, she's not trustworthy, I need to fend for myself, I am going to not depend on her, and I'm going to start forging this path on my own. And that may sound silly to think that a 10-year-old would do that, but there are 3-year-olds that do that. There are 3-year-olds that figure out their attachment to their caregiver is not secure. And they're like, oh, I'm on my own. So I need to figure some things out. And what he's willing to do is, whatever experience it was, it may have been more traumatic than we as adults can understand. Because that's kind of the thing, is like, Todd and I were just talking about an experience I had as a child that's still with me. And if I were to share the story to an adult, they'd be like, that's not traumatic at all. But to a child, for whatever reason it is, and he's willing to do the legwork to build that trust back up. And you get to just not, like, and I think this is why you're asking the question. Hell, if he wants to come out with you in 0-degree weather, he's always welcome.
Well, and right? I would parent from the present moment. And I heard you a little bit, Megan, in like, oh, is this normal? Should we like modify his behavior? Because he might be like this when he's 12. I would just say,
he won't.
Stay here. Mm-hmm. Don't worry. He wants to be with you. Mm-hmm. If he was 20 years old, I think I would be a little nervous, but little guy's 10 and you're going to wish for the, you know, someday you're going to look back and be like, oh, I wish he would spend more time with me.
So, and Todd's talking about the social part is your connection with him, but I'm also thinking to myself, let's say it has nothing to do with the experience you just shared with us, or, you know, it's not similar to my daughter where I actually didn't show up. Let's say it's something different. Let's say that he's now 10, and again, different than the 8-year-old. He does have abstract thinking now, which is why a lot of 10-year-olds, 9, 10, 11-year-olds start sleeping with the lights on again, because life gets scary, because the world feels more scary. They see things, whereas when they were 5, they didn't think about the things they think about when they're 10. So he may be developing a new sense of security, and he's developing it by, when you're around, staying close to you. So it's like he may not even be, like your conversation with him was so amazing to say, does this drive you crazy that you have, you know, that you want to be with me and that you guys can have that kind of really carefree conversation, that he's like, oh yeah, it drives me crazy, and be like, I know, but we'll just stick it out together. Like, we're in this together. And if you need to, because my oldest daughters, my 16-year-old and my 14-year-old, when they've had a tough day, they will come in and sleep with us. Not together always. And we have a place on the floor. But they're not afraid of the dark. They're just need a night where they don't have to be dependent on their own, like, you know, make their own security their priority. Like they don't do it a lot, But I find it to be when they're in there and when they fall asleep that I'm like, just our presence is developing something in them. And you're, even though you're in the stall with them, pain in the ass, like I gotta like be with you on that one. That's tough. But while you're sitting there going pee and he's in the stall with you, you can be like, he's developing an inner self with me in this urinal.
Keep him safe and get out of their way.
Yeah.
This is a way for you to keep your son emotionally safe. Mm-hmm. And then he will spring.
Yeah. Yeah.
He will just launch out into the world. Mm-hmm. Because he has the center of gravity. Yep. Knowing that his mom will not shun him when he wants to go to the bathroom when his mom does or whatever.
And if he's 14 and he says, I mean, he's not going to be going in the bathroom with you, but if he says, I need to just walk with you or come out with you, that's good too.
Well, and sadly, 16, sadly, 20. It's just going to take one time where his, you know, he may say something to a buddy and it'll take one comment from a peer to kind of like, sadly, mm-hmm. wake him up and say, okay, I can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. So
Until that day,
yeah.
You are helping him develop a sense of yes. self. You really are.
So we're going to go to Anita, and then we're going to go over to Matt after Anita. So let me see if I can unmute her, and I'm having a hard time, so hang on. Hi, Anita.
Hi, Anita.
Hi. Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good. Where are you calling
Good.
From?
I'm in a town called St. Lazare. It's near suburbs of Montreal, Quebec. Canada. So
awesome. Well,
very
welcome.
Cold and snowy here. Yeah. Yes. It's really great to talk to you guys. It's, I have you with me in the car all the time, every day. So drive my kids to school. And, Kathy, I think you're brilliant. Like I really appreciate you guys. So,
so do I.
That's nice thing to say. I appreciate it.
So my issue is my 11-year-old daughter, well, 11 and a half, she is, well, she's independent. She's aggressive. And she's very, I think she's at an age now where like, okay, mom, whatever, like you're talking too much. And I, you know, I'm trying to transition. She has an older sister who's almost 14 as well. So I have two girls. I'm not sure. I tend to like bounce back and forth between like hold the rules, be really strict. Sorry, my voice is shaking. I'm nervous.
That's fine. That's fine.
She can be so tough. Like she has a personality that is like not like me. Mm-hmm. Mm. So I just need to connect with her and I just need to find a way to not be the mean mom all the time. Like I feel like I'm mean. Mm-hmm. And it's there's so much like negativity in the house. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more to it, but she's a great kid. She's a great student. She mm-hmm. does really well. She just at home, she just like wants to shut herself off, do her own thing. She never wants to like, and then sometimes she'll like spring back and forth and she'll want to be really affectionate, mostly towards my husband because she has, I don't know, she gravitates towards men. My father-in-law, she's yeah. very affectionate. So maybe it's like a man thing. I don't know. So I just need to connect with her and I feel like to do that, I need to back off. I need to stay away from her. So it's like an elastic. It's either I'm too hard and I'm too strict and she wants to like get away with everything. Well, get away with, mm-hmm. or it's like, you know, I just forget it. I'm going to just back off and do nothing. And that doesn't feel right either. Mm-mm. I want to guide her. I want to be there for her. I want to, you know, be a good mom like we all do, but I have a really hard time connecting with her. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure exactly what my question is, but
I understand. I've yeah. heard this before. Like this is not, I've been talking a lot. Did you want to say something?
Yeah,
first?
Just real quick. So I'm going to mute you, Anita, just so the audio comes in a little bit better.
Oh, and by the way, in women's circle and in Team Zen, we do cry. Yeah. Like that's something we do. Like, and I'm saying women's circle because when women are new to my circle, they'll always be like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, dude, that's why we're here. We do this to cry and to laugh and to, so just, so everybody knows that. We've had other people who have cried, but that this is the place you're supposed to do that. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. And it also shows you give a shit, which is a good yeah, thing.
That's right.
These are some of the words I wrote down as you were talking, Anita. I'm mean, I'm strict. I have a feeling that you are really, really hard on yourself And sometimes that shows up in the way that you parent your 11-year-old daughter. So I think you're a loving mom from what I can gather. I think a lot of this has to do with your own work and your own ability to love yourself. Because if you can do that and accept yourself for not being perfect or whatever shortcomings that you have.
Or like different from your daughter.
From your daughter. And you're like, well, if I'm too strict, that's not good. But if I pull all the way back. So obviously it's a balance between the two. But it seems like your push-pull is the aggressive, which is the strict, and the passive. And I don't think either one of those two are a good idea. Like, you can be actively observant without teaching, without instructing, without guiding. It doesn't mean you like withdraw and emotionally detach yourself from whatever situation you're in. So I would encourage you to, you know, and you're like, I don't want to be mean. And I totally hear you. And I think that if, as you do your own work, you're going to figure out how to not be mean. So it's not just passive or aggressive. There's that sweet spot in between that you need to find for yourself, maybe if not first, at the same time as you find it for your daughter. Because if you find it for your daughter and then you piss all over yourself and you hold yourself up to this unbelievable standard, then it's fake. It's inauthentic. So do some of your own work. So that's where I'm going to start. Yeah. Where do you go?
Yeah, I think I agree with Todd. Like, you know, it is always good to see the words we're using, because of that kind of tells you how we're like blaming. I was talking with a woman last night, and she has an older daughter, and she kept saying similar things to you. She said, I just feel like I'm screwing her up, and she's not that touchy-feely, and I feel like the fact that she doesn't want to hug me means I'm doing something wrong. And really what is going on, Anita, is you have a daughter, and you said this, who's different than you. And so she, instead of doing the same things you did or have done or continue to do with your older daughter or your older child, I didn't hear that it was a daughter, but you know, your older child, is that she is the one where instead of just going back and trying the same thing over and over again, she's going to be the kid that you're most creative with. And the thing that I was thinking is, like you said, she likes to come home and be alone. There may be very many reasons for that. Number one is puberty. Number two, things going on at school that feel overwhelming that she may not think anyone understands. Number three, she could be more sensory or sensitive than you know, where she's been in the energy of school all day and she needs to not be around people. All of those, and then there could be 10 other reasons. So a lot of times as parents, we make it about us. They don't want to be out here because of me. She wants to be away from us. And there's almost a sense of like we're controlling all of these things, or we play a role in all of this. And we may play a small role, like she may be annoyed at us and want some space, but it's not all about us. It's so what we get to do as the parent is we get to be creative in how we interact. And if she really doesn't, if there's like a language dynamic where she gets defensive or there's a lot of arguments, I would start a process of leaving her some notes. And they don't have to be cheesy notes or apologetic notes. There's nothing necessarily to apologize for unless there's something to apologize for. Meaning it's not like, oh, I've messed up. Don't shame yourself. Just say, I know sometimes when we talk, it seems to end up in an argument, and I'm going to be creative about ways to reach you, and I love you. And leave it there. She may say, I don't know what this means, Mom. What does this mean? I don't know either, but I am willing to, you know, and you don't have to leave her a post-it note every day. You can text her occasionally a note. You can, you know, put a, you know, text her something you think she'd think is funny, but don't look for the feedback right away. Meaning don't think I'm going to write her this note and I can't wait to see what she says to me. Mm-hmm. She may do nothing.
Yeah.
She may not respond to it. She may be like, this is dumb. That's fine, because you're not looking for her to call you a good mom and make you feel good. You are looking for ways to do what Todd said, which is go beyond yourself and do something creative, and it may work or it may not. And to recognize that your role is not to, and you didn't say this at all, but we're not raising people just like us. She came into the world a certain way, and you're navigating a relationship with this person rather than teaching her to be like you or anybody else. And so you're just learning who she is.
Yeah. And before we go to Matt, and I say this with love, Anita, I feel like you're there's judgment in her, and it's just because I feel like you're judging yourself, and we all do that. And I just want, once again, this goes back to your own work, is, you know, take the steps into figuring out how can you accept yourself exactly who you are. Like, don't seek out any approval or security or control from the outside. We're all born with this inherent loving being inside of us, and it does not require any outside other person to confirm that. That is our birthright, and that's who we are. And if you can do that, the non-judgment will ooze from your body. And it's a lifelong journey. It's something we all work on.
So. Right, because you, Todd shares that a lot, you know, and as do I sometimes, about we're just worthy because we're worthy. But we're also human, so that can be difficult to do. You know, sometimes we want the acknowledgement, am I doing a good job? Am I doing okay? So the bottom grounding agent is, it's not about I'm doing it well as a mom, therefore I'm worthy. It's I'm worthy, therefore I can take some risks as a mom. You're just switching the things, you know, I am worthy. She's struggling with me right now, but I'm going to decrease my judgment so she can decrease her judgment. Yeah. It's, you know,
and you guys are staying connected through this dance that you guys are doing. So just a few,
and you're not alone, Anita. I hear these stories all the time. So it's not especially her age. So I don't want you to feel like, oh my God, my children. It's so normal.
A few things on the chat that I'll read, just because not everybody's on the call. They listen to it afterwards. Kimmy says, sending you hugs. Jennifer says, hugs to you, Anita. Remember 100% support, which was Kimmy's tagline that she gave to us.
That we need to reimburse her for that. We need to give her a free month or something.
Gratitude, sweetie. We already covered that.
Look, she's shaking her head. We should.
Kelsey says, yay, crying. I've cried several times on a Zen talk and have been nervous and had a shaky voice. Thanks for speaking up. And Millie says, Anita, first, I feel your pain. I have a newly 12-year-old daughter who's also very opposite from me, which is the cause of much of my frustrations. I have finally come to the realization that it's not her that I need to change, but myself. I had to become very, 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 very aware of what my own triggers were. It's super, super hard, and I continue to struggle with it. But that's why she is my daughter.
Beautiful.
I've got something to learn from her. Oh, yes, notes. The idea of love notes that someone posted on Facebook was brilliant. I don't remember that.
Well, this is what I've been doing on your door every morning.
Oh, yeah.
That's
why
I've been so confused. Todd's like, oh, there's another one. I go, yes, one every day. And he's like, oh.
Is that forever?
No, till Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah. Well, we should do that forever because I like seeing them. All my kids and my husband have really loved them. And I think that my daughter's recent jovial attitude may be due to those love notes.
Yes.
Melanie says, I've been writing the Valentine hearts for my boys and leaving one every morning on my door, waking up early to do this before they get up. My 12-year-old has yet to react in a way that I can see, but I'm still doing it.
Still do it. It's exactly. It's not for the reaction. It's going in.
Alyssa says, yes, I've been having so much fun with the love notes, hitting my words of affirmation, love language, kids heart. Melanie, my 12-year-old boy, no reaction, but my twins, it just adjusted. But my twin 10-year-olds, tons of enthusiasm. So it sounds like love notes are a good thing. I missed a memo.
I know, but the girls had them on their door.
I missed a meeting.
I know, but did you see, you've been recognizing
I
the girls.
I put out the first few for you because you weren't here.
So I went to Galena by myself on February 2nd. So on February 1st, I put them on everybody's door, and then I left two envelopes, one that said Saturday, one that said Sunday. And I said, Todd, put them on their door. I thought he had seen this on Team Zen. So he did the first one, second one, he forgot. And my oldest daughter did it. She found it and did it.
I knocked the first one out of the park though. I put those there. It was wonderful. But yeah, I missed the second day.
It was wonderful. One thing I want to share for everybody who's doing the love notes. Something that if you're like trying to come up with new things, one thing that I always do is I print out pictures of my kids' favorite things, like TV shows that we watch together, and I just tape the picture to their door. Like, there is a show I watch with my oldest, and I taped a picture of the two people. There's a show I watched with my middle, and I taped a picture. It's Stephen Colbert, who she loves. I taped a picture of him. So it can be words, but it can also just be things that are reminiscent of the things you share.
Kimmy says, my husband didn't get it either, and my son throws it away. My son throws it away each morning, but I do it anyways.
Yes, keep doing it because I'm acting like I know your son now, but he reads it and probably doesn't believe it quite yet, but you're not going to stop believing.
Here's
it.
The deal.
Don't stop believing.
Regardless of what feedback you get, which could be them throwing it away.
I'm just picturing him taking it off, crumpling it.
Because even that has lessons in it. Like, right. I'm not doing this
for you.
For me.
Right.
This is a gift. This is true. What is a gift? A gift is something you give without any expectation of return. As opposed to my dad, who will send a gift and then ask me when I get it and then wait for a thank you note. And then he
wants a thank you note for the thank you note.
He wants two thank you notes. One for, so anyways, that's my dad. We're going to go over to Matt.
Yeah. So, and again, to Todd's point, these love notes are just for us to feel that we are connecting with our children in a different way. And, you know, whatever comes of it is great. Enthusiasm or not.
Sweet. Anita says, thanks everyone. She feels the love. Isn't that a song? I feel the love tonight.
No, that's not a song.
Well, I think I should start writing that song.
Okay.
I'm sure there's a song.
I'm glad
you're
inspired by those lyrics.
All right, Matt, what do you got?
So this is a two-part question, but they're kind of directly related.
Right.
So first part is, just to give you a bit of background, I'm in the Navy, posted to Ottawa, Ontario, but I have a soon-to-be six-year-old daughter that lives in Victoria, British Columbia, so quite far away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing my best to try and keep the connection with her through FaceTimes and other things, but I find it really hard to do that and feel like I'm not doing it well.
Well, yeah.
So I guess question one is do you have any advice or tips on how to maintain a relationship with a daughter that's so far away?
Mm.
She visits us at Christmas time and over the summer, and I'm about to go out there for her birthday in March, but those are so far apart, months apart. So how do you maintain a connection with someone who's far away?
Mm.
And second part is dealing with my ex during these FaceTimes is sometimes my daughter's really good at just interacting. Other times she just wants to sit at her table and color or do crafts or play with her toys or whatever. And I'm happy to watch her do whatever. I'm happy to interact with her. I'm happy to just watch her. But if she's not interacting with me, my ex gets very upset and starts getting mad at her.
Talk to your dad.
And the more that happens, she gets more upset and my daughter shuts down and completely doesn't want to do anything anymore and just kind of sits in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And when I try to talk to my ex about it and saying like, I'm happy just to watch her do whatever. And she's, and what comes out of that is that we have radically different parenting philosophies mm-hmm. on how we want to do things. She's the yell, punish, take things away, timeout kind of person. And Jack and I, with our kids, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. And so when I tell her like, I don't want you to do that. I don't care if she colors or I just want to interact in our own way. And I try and tell her my philosophy. She calls our philosophy like hippy dippy bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe in it. Mm-hmm. And just end the discussion. So mm-hmm. I guess question two is how do I deal with her who doesn't agree with my or our parenting philosophy? And I don't agree with hers, but her not agreeing with mine impacts my FaceTimes with my soon to be 6-year old.
Yeah.
And she doesn't get it or doesn't care that isn't impacting it significantly for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really know how to approach that other than what I've done, and it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
Yep. Great question.
Wow. That's heavy and deep and poignant and everything else. First of all, it's a really hard question, and I would love to say I have the perfect answer for you, which I don't. I would encourage, and it's so funny when you first started talking and, you know, when your ex-wife would say, no, talk to your father, you know, you always hear those terrible stories where like, you know, initially I was happy that your ex-wife was trying to facilitate this discussion, and then you kept on talking, and now I'm realizing that it's not the same parenting style that you guys have.
And it doesn't involve her. She's telling her daughter how to communicate. Do you see what I mean?
No.
So when he's calling, he's engaged with his daughter, and it's the two of them, and she's coming in and saying, here's how you need to engage with your dad.
Yes.
But it doesn't have anything to do with
and
mom.
Matt has said to, let's get some names here. Matt, what's your ex-wife's name?
Pamela.
So you say, Pamela, let us do this the way we want to do it, and she'll insert the way she thinks it ought to be done. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I would tell her like, cause our daughter's name is Jude, and I would say, you know, I'm happy if Jude just does whatever. If she wants to color, I'm happy to do that. If she's happy to just play with her toys, I'm happy with that. If she wants to talk to me and tell me about her day, I'm happy with that. I don't care what our interaction is, because as long as it's some sort of interaction, but Pamela is more like, no, I want you to talk to him. I want you to tell him about your day.
Yeah.
Tell him what you do with your friends. Tell him what you're learning in school. And I'm of the opinion, like, if she doesn't want to tell me that, that's fine with me. I'm happy just to do whatever with her. But she can't get past that. She expects her to talk to me.
Yeah.
interact directly with me. And when I try and bring it up, she's just like, no, I'm not going to, when my daughter gets upset, she's like, I'm not going to put up with that.
Yeah.
She's going to cry and or yell. I'm not going to put up with that.
Yeah.
And starts yelling at her. I'm going to take your iPad away. I'm going to take your toys away if you don't interact with your dad. I don't care how we interact. I'm just happy to see her and do things and watch her do things, but she can't wrap her brain around her, my daughter not interacting, like you said, the way she wants her to.
Yeah, and let's just like get clear. You have no control over Pamela at all. It doesn't even sound like you have any influence on her. So you ask her to do something, she's going to do it her way, either way. Yeah. So the first thing I would say is, you know, settle into the idea of surrendering. I mean, I think there's a part of, if I were in your position, I would want to control this. Like, no, please allow me to interact with my daughter in the way. But the bottom line is, she has inserted her authority because she's in the room. And you're going to have to like do this dance with her. And Kathy said that she's going to have some ideas, but if there's other ways that you can interact with your daughter in addition to the FaceTime thing, and whether that, you know, the love languages are words, gifts, touch you can't do from a distance, but you could do words and gifts from a distance, acts of service and quality time. So the quality time is the FaceTime thing. Maybe you could even mention to Pamela, like, you know, I want to hit my daughter's love languages in many different ways, and quality time is one of those things. So can you allow us to have this quality time where she's just coloring, I'm watching her, we're like slightly having some discussions, but it's not in the same way she wants it to be. So
yeah. So going off of what Todd just said, like that, I got a lot of pictures in my head as you were talking, which is why I'm a little more antsy about talking, because I don't want to forget it. So one of the things is that I want to recognize the fact that for you to be on FaceTime and her to be coloring and you just to be there is huge for her, and that you're okay with that. I want to acknowledge that even though it's getting disrupted, that is all she needs. I'm going to give you other ideas of how to connect with her. But what I mean is that think about if you were in the same home, that is how you'd be interacting. And so she doesn't want the pressure of having to be on and having to demonstrate to you all these things she did. That would just be play acting. And what you're giving her is the opportunity to just show up as yourself on the phone, and you accept her. So these are the ideas that came into my head. Number one, and you may already do some letter writing with her, and it could be typed. You don't have to handwrite it, but I would handwrite some letters to her, type some letters to her and like answer some questions, like, even go through and like do numbers. Like number one, you know, today I thought about you when I was doing blah, 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 and kind of give her some, it doesn't have to be really exciting things. It can be things about your work, or I ran into this person, or I saw this beautiful tree or whatever. And just write down like four things that about your day or about your life where you thought about her and mail it. And maybe she can do the same, like, you know, write back to you four things she did and ask her if she would. She may not. You know, she's going to have to go through her mom for stamps and stuff, so I can't guarantee that that'll happen. But my other thought is, I was visualizing if you in some way could connect with her either, and she's probably not old enough to have Facebook or something like that, but if you could take pictures with your phone and either A, be able to send them to her somehow, either through, I don't know if her mom will show her or not, again, I don't know, or to put together, like the visual I got, and I'm starting to think it's kind of a project, but if I was far away from a child, like I would want her to see some of the things I was doing and that in all of those places I was thinking about her. And so when we went to this place and we were at dinner, and while I was there, we mentioned your name, we thought about you, and we know you love eating here, and maybe putting together books or putting, you know, like Shutterfly does a book for like $10. All you have to do is upload these pictures, type in some words, and they'll create a book and ship it.
I got an idea. So she's six, so you know it's a little bit challenging because it's not like she's writing letters, but voice
she
memo.
She can write letters though. A 6-year old.
I know. I'm just thinking like if she's 13, it would be a different
right,
story.
You're right. Yeah.
Pictures, so, pictures. But so I feel like, you know, sorry to kind of always be learning, but I feel like your ex-wife is presenting a challenge in front of you, and I want to give you the space to complain about it because that does suck. But at the same time, let's get creative on how to do it. Kathy's coming up with some wonderful solutions. Voice memo. When I travel, sometimes I'll sing to my youngest daughter almost every night, and I'll do the same lullaby into my phone in a voicemail. and then I'll have Kathy play it before she goes to bed. That's a one-sided conversation, but still it's a vehicle of connection. So
the key is, will his ex-wife play
and
it?
And I think he will, and we'll ask him in a second. But that's the key. It's a one-sided conversation, but it removes the variable of Pamela effing it up if she actually delivers it. So I'm going to just ask Matt. Like, I don't know what state of consciousness Pamela is in, but if you did like a weekly memo, voice memo, in addition to the FaceTime, not instead of, but in addition to, or a few times a week voice memo, would she absolutely play it for her or no?
I think she probably would. She's usually pretty good for that kind of stuff. It's where the issues arises during the FaceTime, just not so much like we've mailed stuff to her before, like picture books and things like that. And she's gotten them and family gave them to her. And because she just started school as a 5-year-old, she's not writing yet. She can write a few words, but she can't write letters yet.
Got it.
And she can't read a letter yet. So again, Pamela would have to engage to do that, to read it to her. And I think she would. I'm fairly certain she would. Mm.
So, yeah. And even, you know, because she's that age, like picture drawing, like you could, and again, you don't have to be a great artist, you know, it can be stick figures, but picture drawings for her of you holding her hand, you know, these small things that kids can hold on to are really meaningful, because if she feels, you know, separate from you, which is obvious, I don't mean it's, you know, constant, but because you literally have separation, pictures of you, literal snapshots, but also pictures that you draw saying, I'm thinking about you, and, you know, it's you holding her hand, and you mail one of those once a week, twice a week, that makes a huge impact. Like, it sometimes feels a little out of our comfort zone, like, I don't really draw, or I'm not creative, or, but then when you are on FaceTime with her, there's even more meaning behind just being with her, because you've already sent her letters, and you've already had an opportunity to converse, and FaceTime can be more about being rather than doing. And that's good language for Pamela, maybe. My FaceTime with our daughter is just about being. I need no doing from her, you know?
Yeah, I think you're just going to have to keep on getting creative. Yeah. And I totally, you know, as a dad, I can understand that there's probably some sadness and some pain that goes along with trying to connect with a daughter who is not living in the same house as you. And I just want to bless you for asking this question, for trying. There's so many dads out there that do not display that level of mature masculine. And I just want to honor you for that. And just keep getting creative, come up with different ideas, and maybe even get creative in how to connect with Pamela while at the same time not trying to manipulate Pamela into fitting in exactly the way you want her to be with your daughter. Cause that's a whole nother level of conversation. Cause you know, she obviously has a lot more influence because she's living in the same house as Pamela, whereas you are on a TV screen or only visit a few times a year or whatever. So it's tricky stuff.
And when she, you know, says things like, you guys are hippy dippy, whatever, because we get that kind of thing too, just say, well, I know to you we are. You know, I'm doing my best. Like, this is, you know, like, we don't, and you didn't say you got defensive about it at all, but sometimes we get defensive about why we're doing it and why it would benefit her if she did it. And we can just kind of roll with it, but maintain our sense of dignity about it, that you are doing it for a reason.
So there's a whole bunch of really good ideas that's in the chat. Good. So just so I know, it's just so I'm not going to read them all because of time. But I want to tell everybody, whether you're listening to this afterwards or during, I save these chats and I put them in the show notes. So they'll be on there.
Those are two really good things.
You want me to read them?
Yeah. Just the basics.
Millie's and Alyssa's.
Well, do you want me to do, I'll just do a quick synopsis. So Millie was saying that about the photos that we were just talking about, that taking photos during the day, week, printing out old fashioned pictures, you know, like you could literally print them from your printer and then you can mail them and say, these are the times that I was thinking about you. So I think that's really, that gives her something to go through and have. And then she also knows that no matter what you're doing, she's still with you. You know, that it's not about, I'm either with dad now or I'm not. You're always with her in your heart, Invisible String.
Ooh, and that's
then
a good book.
Invisible String is a good book. Have you ever heard of that book, Matt? The Invisible String?
No, I haven't.
It'll be perfect.
We'll put it in the, you know, so you can link to it.
Millie will find it.
Millie will find it and put it in there for you. It's really about when we're apart from someone that we never are, that there is a string that connects our hearts. And it's having that language of when she feels separate from you, or if she ever this year or another year says she feels distant from you, to say we always have this invisible string is really beautiful. It's such a good book. And then Alyssa said, this is a great idea. What about reading books during FaceTime? Mm-hmm. Reading her a book. Say, I got a great book. Do you want to listen while you color? That's really great. You could send her the book, get a copy for yourself. You mm-hmm. could ask her to find the book and, you know, read to her, color. Yeah, this is really good.
And I want to go to you one more time, Matt, before we kind of close shop here. But I don't know if this makes sense, but I feel like this might be a vehicle for you to kind of figure out how to connect with Pamela. And I'm sure there's a reason why you're not together anymore. So it's probably not an easy thing, but just look at this as a possible opportunity for you guys to somehow connect and find solid ground on parenting or the long distance parenting. And I'm sure it's not an easy thing to do, but
he may have done a lot of work already.
I know.
Yeah.
Just don't give up. But anyways, yeah. Matt, what do you think?
I think they're all great ideas. Now, someone mentioned an iCloud account as well, which we have. We text back and forth, but just the pictures, like the emoticons.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We do that sometimes. But I think in dealing with Pamela, it's just difficult because our approaches are so radically different, and mm-hmm. she's just not open to anything else. She wants to see parents the way she was parented.
That's right.
And we don't want to do that.
Yep.
I don't want to do the same things that my parents did, and it just causes friction and clashes.
Yeah.
You're on the right track. Take some of these ideas. And again, I always have to throw this in. It's all a practice. So if the reading through FaceTime is just not landing, that's okay. Or if you do the pictures just for a month and then it doesn't, you know, like, it's not about that you're doing it wrong. It's just about that, you know, it's kind of like we were talking to Anita about, you just try new things and something will stick for a while and then it'll change. And then she'll get older and she will be able to call you on her own. Like, everything changes, you know. People always say this, but this too shall pass, meaning she's going to be at an age eventually where you're going to have a lot more, you know, you'll have more ability to connect with her on your own. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, this is kind of in a weird way, the hardest time.
It is the hardest time.
Mm-hmm. So bless you, brother. I really honor what you're trying to do. All right. So let's close shop here, sweetie.
All right.
Did you want to make any announcements?
Oh, so Millie, we have to give a shout out to Millie because Millie lives in California and she lives by this really beautiful place called 1440. It's kind of like Omega Institute in New York. And so it's like a, you know, spiritual training place, teaching. It's kind of resortish. Like, how else would you describe it? Just
it's a beautiful retreat center,
retreat center. And so Millie told the woman who runs the programs that she should call us to do a program there. And this woman did because of Millie, and we're going to be teaching at 1440 in October. So I thank you, Millie, for that intervention. And, you know, yes, we're so excited. And it's October 25th, 26th, something like that.
Give or take.
So, you know, you don't have to worry about it now because I know we have the conference and it's way far away, but we will be talking about it because we could have a little Team Zen retreat in California.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be fun. So thank you, Millie.
Thank you, Millie. We'll give you guys more information as it comes in. Anything else?
No, just that there's so many questions and that's good. Like, there's must be something in the air and something that we're all feeling a little, you know, I believe in things going on in the earth and astrology a little more than my husband does as far as the way we're affected, but we're all experiencing things, and I just hope you all know that you're not alone. When you're struggling with something, you're not struggling with it alone. Even if we don't understand all the details, I just want you to know that there's people thinking about you. And
so we're going to do something different this time, everybody. It's a closed shop. I'm going to unmute all of you guys, and then we're all going to say goodbye to each other. That way we can hear each other's voices. Are you okay with that?
Sure.
Okay, good. All right, so everybody say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Oh, everybody's waving.
Bye.
Catch you guys soon.
Love you all.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Love you all. That probably made you happy because there were so many questions on the...
I know, but we got a whole bunch of written down questions that we're going to have to address, and we didn't get to Lindsay.
That's right. I'll email her and...
Well, what I was going to say is we can stop recording, because mm-hmm. people don't want to hear that.
Sure they do. They want to hear us talk afterwards.
You guys want to hear the end of our conversations?
Do you guys want to hear Todd eat watermelon?
We're still listening. We're spying.
I know. Okay.